welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities in London. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. In this interview, we talk to George Ferguson and Richard Holden as we walk along the Brunel Mile in Bristol on a blustery day. We leave it to Richard and George to introduce themselves.
I'm Richard Holden and I'm a planner with the Urban Design and Conservation team in Bristol City Council. And I've been working for the last 15 years or so on the Harbourside Regeneration Project. On the promotional side of the regeneration, acting as a kind of broker between the developers, the landowners, the local community and the planning authority.
Okay, I'm George Ferguson, architect, urbanist, brewer and Bristolian of only 40 years, a relative newcomer. The whole thinking behind what was the Millennium and is now the Brunel Mile is that it is the missing mile in Brunel's great rail and sea journey between London and New York. The City Fathers, in all their wisdom, prevented him bringing the Great Western Railway right to the docks. He wanted to bring the Great Western Railway right into the docks. You got out of your train, into the hotel, into the SS Great Britain, or the Great Western, probably, and sailed across the Atlantic. Anyway, that dream was wrecked because the City Fathers saw this great beast of a train going across the historic city as being damaging. They may have been right. So while we were doing the thinking behind Bristol's Millennium Project at Bristol, which I was involved in doing the master planning for Harbourside, I suddenly noticed it's an exact imperial mile between Brunel's train shed and the dry dock in which the SS Great Britain now stands and which it was built. So it just had a nice alliteration about it. I invented the idea of the Millennium Mile. And then quite rightly, and that was partly cynical because we were after Millennium funding for our Millennium project and it got great acceptance.
Sounds fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to chase the money. Later on, quite rightly, that got turned into the Brunel Mile. But what's really interesting about this mile, it's got so much more history than just that history about that missing mile. And the point of the mile is that it's highly sustainable, highly environmentally friendly, tries to produce a mile that is reasonably separated from the traffic and friendly to the cyclists and pedestrians.
So it actually follows a new line?
It follows an old line that's sort of rediscovered. What we're about to do is walk along the old port wall that leads us to Redcliffe Bridge and the what's called the floating harbour, which is the city docks. Because the floating harbour, known as the floating harbour, because now, as a result of all the engineering works that was done, boats don't have to hit the mud every time the tide goes down. And so it's a wonderful resource running through the centre of the city. And the great thing about the Brunel Mile is that it crosses the floating harbour at three points. So we'll go along the port wall. In the process, we'll go past Chatterton's house and schoolhouse. And Chatterton, of course, was probably the most romantic of all Bristolians' characters. Great poet, died in mysterious circumstances, extremely young, and had very strong associations with Redcliffe here. Yeah.
With the Brunel Mile itself, it links the ship to the railway, or the railway to the dry dock.
Yeah.
But did you try to make it so it linked other Brunel heritage sites?
No, we didn't try and make it do anything. In that Brunel was connected with the floating harbour, yes it does, and that his suspension bridge is beyond that, yes it does. But we didn't really try. What we did is we did the obvious. And I always think that it is doing the obvious that often does the best thing. We just followed a desire line. This is the perfect example of that desire line. I mean, what we've walked through so far is a load of rubbish. And the great challenge now is how we complete the connection between the Brunel Mile, as you will now see it, and the station. An essential element of the Brunel Mile is that you get interesting views and interesting things happening on the way. It's not just about the history, it's not just about the practicality, it's also about the inspiration that you get along the way.
I mean, the original concept, obviously, there's always been an idea that the route is very important because, as George said, it's part of the old line of the port wall, but probably came into light more as part of the Bristol Legible City project, which identified the principal routes through the city centre, linking three major regeneration areas. It's Harbourside, Temple Quay and Broadmead, and up into the west end of the city, the Clifton area. What we were looking for was a way of helping people navigate around the city, that's not just visitors but also residents as well, which would actually reinforce the identity of different parts of the city centre and give people a unified and continuous system of indicators to where they were and how to get to various destinations. And that was the concept behind Legible City, and it's a concept which has actually been spread around various other cities in the country as well now. And Brunel Mile was part of the Blue Route, which was the initial principal route system within the city. It was reckoned that probably 90% of the destinations in the city centre were within at least 250 metres of this Blue Route.
And I was explaining, here's Chatterton's house, yeah. And actually we're on the other side of the pretty front of his school, which is built up against it. I mean, I think the front of the school has been moved to be there. And an awful lot was moved because of this dreadful highway that was built along here. And certainly it's been my ambition to see that highway go, or at least be extremely downgraded.
That is part of the plan for this area. We're now at least getting to a point where we're identifying a downgraded route for traffic through here and some development that will help pay to downgrade that. And one of the principal benefits is going to be the creation of a new space in front of St Mary Redcliffe Church.
Which will be a built space. Yes. I mean, it will use buildings to define the space. I mean, St Mary Redcliffe, in medieval times, had buildings going right up to it. And so having it as a sort of iconic church on a roundabout and dual carriageway may be great for drivers, but it's certainly not great for anybody else.
You defined the route fairly quickly because it seemed fairly obvious, and you said it followed the line of the port wall, but already George has and I have crossed a bit where it's fairly disconnected, and here we're coming to an area which is well designed. How much more is there to do to bring it up to a standard one would desire?
The only bit left to complete in
the
other bit
through the Grosvenor Hotel.
That's right, yeah.
Because I love that view that you get through that slot of St Mary Redcliffe from coming from Temple Meads. It's an absolute classic.
Yeah. I think the slot is being retained.
Yeah.
But the only other bit is the bit at the other end of the Cannons Marsh development, which finally kind of links through opposite the SS Great Britain. And then that will be your Brunel Mile, which is one element of the Blue Route.
And the reasons it takes so long is that to actually, you know, address this all in one go would be too expensive, too difficult, because...
There's the cost thing. I mean, it's obviously not cheap surface material here.
But also...
It's opportunity.
Most of it has come with opportunity, with development opportunity. I mean, one of the Bristol's greatest projects, I think, in recent times has been the Queen Square project. That was a wonderful opportunity to include that. It came actually before the Brunel Mile implementation, but it's become a natural part of it.
Yeah.
Another essential thing was the crossing over Narrow Quay, but we'll see
this route has been here since the 1970s.
Yeah.
It is just an opportunistic thing.
Has it been a case that you sort of draw the line on a map or a plan, and then every time a new development comes up, you manage to produce this plan at some point and say, how about contributing to the Brunel Mile?
It went into a city plan in the mid to late 1990s, so it's been in the city plan for 10 or 12 years. It's exciting now to see it emerging, because it's really at least two-thirds there. If Rich and I have a difference, it's probably about what you do at the SS Great Britain end. Because I would love to spring a bridge over there as the final leap, and Richard thinks we should settle for the ferry.
Well, our view is that the difficulties that poses for navigation, let alone the cost of actually providing a bridge, which would be astronomical at that location, the difficulties of navigation and what the impact it would have on the hitherto uninterrupted stretch of water all the way from Cumberland Basin right up into the centre, we just don't think it's worth it. And you can get a ferry to do the same thing.
And then this going through Queen Square.
When I lived here, it was it had cars running around it and a bus running through the middle.
Queen Square was the victim of a bit of civic vandalism in the 1930s, when it was decided that we needed to have this inner circuit road. And Redcliffe Bridge is part of that. They took out buildings at this corner and in the far corner, turned Risbrach's statue through 45 degrees so that it would align with the dual carriageway that ran across here.
King William, by Risbrach, one of the finest equestrian statues in Europe, stood in the middle of, on the central reservation of a dual carriageway.
Yeah. It had been long our ambition to reclose that road and divert to glory. It took a long time, partly obviously raising money to do it, aided by an HLF grant, but also convincing the highway engineers and the bus companies and what have you that it wasn't going to create absolute mayhem in the city centre. We closed the road under an experimental order because it didn't require an inquiry. It gave us 18 months to see how it worked. And of course it transformed the place, even with the road running through the middle but blocked off. It was suddenly quieter and people started to come out and picnic there. And the businesses around the edge here that were all afraid they were going to completely close down, they thrived equally.
A client of ours restored this building, which is English Heritage's offices, and he was determined to get the parking off the front. We found these remains of the railings and wall in the City Museum and were able to restore it. And it became a really good example to the rest of the square. And now the city took all their credit, I mean, because it was a tough thing to do. Got all the parking away from the buildings and have controlled it in the centre under the trees where it doesn't impinge too much. And I think the whole thing has been an enormous success.
Yeah. I mean, does this, change in level here, is that to mark the original line of the curb?
Cyclists wanted to have a marked path to segregate themselves from pedestrians. And so you can see the little cycle symbols that crop up intervals along the path here.
Actually, what Councillor Terry Cook said, city cycle champion, he said, we don't want more cyclists, we want more people on bikes. Yeah. What he meant is that cyclists tend to be the guys in Lycra head down. And actually what we need is a very civilised cycling pedestrian culture where there's total respect between the two. And then you don't need such demarcation.
Okay, well, so now we're approaching Perrow's Bridge.
This was built getting on for 10 years ago now and was part of the master plan for Cannon's Marsh, and in particular part of the master plan for the At Bristol project, which was the Millennium project. And has become the principal new link. You know, it was the biggest step in terms of making Brunel Mile happen. Yeah. And this was designed by an Irish sculptor, Eilish O'Connell, with Arabs as the engineers. And it's had mixed reception, but I think what matters about it is not whether you like it as a bridge or a piece of sculpture or not. It actually does its job extremely well and was the single biggest factor to bring activity into this area. And this very neatly brings us into the new square of Anchor Square.
Amazingly, when we came forward with the proposal for the bridge here, it's been paid for by these two developments. And you'd be amazed at the number of people who said, what on earth do we need a bridge here for? Because they can just walk up around the top here. And that was the basis of a lot of people's objections. But it is probably one of the most heavily trafficked pedestrian routes in the city now.
Oh, undoubtedly.
And we had lots of fun poked at the shape of the bridge as well. Everybody has their own idea about the design of it, but it's unusual, it's eye-catching.
Well, it had to take off there, it had to land here, so actually the S-curve was quite a sensible solution. But what's great is it then brings us into the series of spaces that are the new Cannon's Marsh.
One of the issues around creating heritage walks and things is
London. But this wasn't done for heritage purposes.
No. Okay.
It was done for a symbolic purpose that had a very practical one of bringing people from the station into the heart of Humberside. It's chance as to whether your attraction happens to be on it or not. But, it does, we've had some Mary Redcliffe, we've got the cathedral, we've got the old leadwork, so we've got industry, we've got religion, we've got science, we've got everything happening on this route. And then we've got, of course, the maritime history as we cross the dock. So I think it's serendipity that this route is a heritage route. On the other hand, you can always rationalise it and say, well, cities are for surprises, and you know, you don't want everything to be too obvious. No. Because I think the experience of walking through the city is one of going down narrow streets, exploding into bigger spaces, as we're doing here, and the more contrast in that there is, the more interesting it is.
You were saying earlier on that you could see the changes taking place, even though it's been in a plan for 10 to 12 years. It's now really coming to fruition. How soon before you think it's going to be?
Well, I think in urban terms, that's quite quick, actually. I mean, the things that last in cities, more than anything, are those bones that you put down. And I think this is a really essential spine, an essential spine in the city. So for it to take 20 years wouldn't be too long. And I think we're getting there in less than that. I'm delighted the way that the city have taken this up and helped make it work, because it wouldn't have, you know, it wouldn't have done so otherwise.
Crossing Perros Bridge, and people see it as a through route, and it's animated that new space and everything else like that. So is that something that's sort of being monitored and being shown and therefore being applied elsewhere in the city then?
Yeah, I wouldn't pretend that it's actually being monitored in any scientific way. It's being monitored in a kind of empirical...
But it's pretty obvious.
It is very obvious,
But what is also obvious is we've got a dead end here at the moment, so there's a hell of a lot to be done to animate it. So it is reliant on the last phase of Cannon's Marsh development, of this bit of Harbourside's development, to animate this end and to make a very strong link, however we describe it, between here and the SS Great Britain.
Very old bridge, yeah.
Yeah. Down towards the ship, you're getting a wider and wider view that not only encompasses the ship and the development of reading it around it, but also opens out views down the harbour and out towards the countryside to the southwest of the city around Ashton Court. The other nice thing about this route is that from this point here where it crosses the road, it then progresses down a slope towards the water, so that you actually come out at water level at the bottom there for the ferry.
Yeah. There's the boat itself.
It's the latest bit of the waterfront walkway that's been opened up. About 25% of the floor area of the development is actually public space and walkway.
So the Brunel Mile will actually come out here, and it is actually a mile.
It is almost exactly a mile.
which is extraordinary.
Yes, you couldn't have planned it better. This combination of the station, ship, which was a hotel, is all being put forward by English Heritage as the World Heritage Site status. So the whole of the railway from Paddington down to Temple Meads and then connecting through to represent this, you know, this first integrated transport idea of a direct link between London and New York, which is what the Britain was designed for. It's great to be able to have that, all of that in the city.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities in London. In this episode, you've heard from George Ferguson and Richard Holden. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the talkingwalking.net website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities, our graphic artwork was designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music was composed and recorded by Simon Sanders at Easytronic.